plagued a potential nugget.
And a related question, Vinay, was the other thing that came through very clearly was the habit of reflection and introspection.
Yeah.
And I guess you allude to that in the context of accessing some of his diaries and his thoughts in the context of your research. But talk to us a little bit about his habit around reflection and introspection and what can we learn from it.
So I think one is what's the cause and two is it helpful, right? I think the cause was firstly, as I said, he was a lonely guy. So what does he do in the evenings, right? He keeps a diary. And he didn't have too many friends. So the diary, like, you know, Anne Frank's diary was, you know, fundamentally a diary that you're talking in the absence of a friend, right? But luckily for him, he was lonely from childhood. So then when he reaches the top in politics, when everybody is lonely, he's pretty used to it. So he's not worried at that point, right? Because he's prepared for loneliness all his life. But I think the diary was a way in which he could be true to himself, because a lot of politicians get fooled by, especially when they're in power, get fooled by the world around them, are unable to tell flattery from the truth. And Narasimha Rao's ability to be introspective, to be inward, helped him sift the day into what, you know, or to put it in statistical terms, to be able to sift the signal from the noise. So I think that's the first thing that introspection taught him, that, you know, one is it taught him don't trust anyone except your diary, which is a pretty good skill in politics. Second is that you should be able to sift the signal from the noise, you know. Who are the people you met every day? You know, how many people are being honest? How many people are lying? You know, to give you just one example, you know, one of the diary entries which I have in the book is from 22nd May 1991, right? This is the day after Rajiv Gandhi has been killed near Chennai. And Narasimha Rao, who at that, until then, had been basically eased out of the Congress and was about to become a monk in a monastery called Kottralam in Tamil Nadu and was closing his bank accounts, is suddenly realizing that by virtue of being the least ambitious man in the party, he's primed to be Prime Minister of India, right? And the diary shows, 22nd May, he's back in Delhi. He's in 10 Janpath, where Sonia Gandhi and Rajiv used to live. And, you know, pieces of Rajiv Gandhi's body, they're just pieces, they're not the full body, are kept there. And all the congressmen are around the body pretending to cry, some of them actually crying, while actually trying to maneuver to see who would succeed him. And he has this wonderful passage about how Pranab Mukherjee, who was in the boondocks then, but would later recover to become President of India, wheedles up to him and says, "We think you should become Prime Minister, Congress President," which is the proxy for Prime Minister of India. And Narasimha Rao immediately says, "I immediately told him that, you know, that it was, you know, that I'm not the right person," right? Knowing full well the kind of person he is. "I also gave him the name of N.D. Tiwari for Prime Minister of India, knowing that he was even less likely a candidate than I am," right? And I think the introspection and the diary allows him to do that. It allows him to reflect over the day. You know, otherwise, you know, think of it. Somebody else come, you know, Pranab Mukherjee came up to me and says, "Maybe you should be Prime Minister of India." I won't stop to ask what's his anger, right? So I think the introspection gave him that ability. I think the third thing introspection gave him was to take the long view. You know, often we're so caught up in the moment that we're unable to, you know, to see short-term benefit from long-term, long-term costs, and unable to separate that, right? For example, Narasimha Rao was frequently sidelined from the party, frequently. He never complained. He never protested against Indira Gandhi. He never protested against Rajiv Gandhi. And very soon he would be back. Whereas people like Sharad Pawar, right? Arjun Singh, right? Or N.D. Tiwari, at the first sign that they were out of favor in the Nehru-Gandhi court, would either form a separate party or sulk or protest. And their careers would end, you know, instead of just kind of, you know, taking it and, you know, hoping that your luck changes, which happened to Narasimha Rao. Now, look, not everybody's luck changes, right? But I think Narasimha Rao's ability to take the long view and not make silly short-term beneficial decisions also contributed to the kind of career he had.
Got it. And just picking up on one of the pieces, Vinay, decoding the signal from the noise, you know, one would think that, you know, there's a benefit in having networks and people telling you, you know, what makes sense and you sort of making sense of that. It's very interesting that he's sort of decoding the signal from the noise in a lonely fashion. How do you think about that? Because how do you decipher intent in a lonely fashion? Wouldn't you, common sense would suggest that you need to have your agents out there come and give you information for you to make sense. So how do you reconcile the two?
No, that's a very good question. And, you know, I did think about this quite a bit, right? And I think the key to the answer is to look at the ecosystem that Narasimha Rao worked under. Now, all of us work under different organizational forms, right?
Right.
In some organizations, important to have your tentacles everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But in an organization like the Congress Party, especially in the 70s, 80s, loneliness was an enormous political virtue. Because if you didn't have too many friends, it meant you didn't have too many enemies. The way the Congress system worked, and this is a famous political scientist, Rajni Kothari's phrase, was that especially in the 50s and 60s, when there was no opposition to the Congress, all the factions of India, you know, the Dalits or Brahmins, left wing or right wing, right, south of India, north of India, was within the Congress party. So you'd have a Congress politician who was Dalit, like Jagjivan Ram. You'd have a Brahmin politician like N.D. Tiwari, right? You'll have a North Indian politician, you'll have a South Indian politician. You'll have a capitalist politician, you'll have a socialist politician, right? And even at the state levels, you'd have factions, which are not really based on ideology. So you'll have in Maharashtra alone, if you look at the Congress, you'll have an Ashok Chauhan faction. You'll have a Prithviraj Chauhan faction, right? And earlier you had a Sharad Pawar's Suresh Kalmadi faction. Now, in that, and the beauty of that system is it suits the high command very well because everybody is cutting each other. So nobody is threatening Sonia Gandhi, nobody is threatening Rajiv Gandhi because at the state level, everybody is cutting each other. Now, given that this is the dynamic of the Congress party, you should not be associated with the faction because the moment you associate with the faction, by nature, you have some friends, but you have a lot of enemies. And in typically what happens in faction struggles is that, you know, and this is what happened with Narasimha Rao when he became the unlikely chief minister of Andhra Pradesh in 1971, that there were these two very big factions, both very powerful. And each one said, we don't want the other guy to be chief minister. And so there was a compromise candidate, a person who was weak, who had no friends, who was lonely, who didn't threaten everyone. And that man was Narasimha Rao. Why was Narasimha Rao made prime minister in 1991? Because for Sonia Gandhi and the people around her, the other far more obvious candidates, Sharad Pawar, N.D. Tiwari, Arjun Singh, were also powerful, were also people with friends. You know, so the ecosystem of Narasimha Rao was such that loneliness was a virtue. But if loneliness is a virtue, then how the hell do you get information? And you get information through introspection, not by having tentacles within the party. But to be fair, Narasimha Rao had a lot of tentacles outside the party. So he had people like Chandraswamy, Tantrics, opposition member, telling him about the Congress because within his own party, he just couldn't trust anyone. You know, so I think the answer here is that, you know, your levels of introspection, you have to keep in mind the organizational ecosystem you work under. And it varies from, you know, and even within the Indian party system, the Congress organizational structure is very unique. And it comes from a history of being the only political party in India. And therefore, the opposition parties are actually within the party itself, right? And in such a situation, you have to be Narasimha Rao to rise.
Very, very interesting. Very nuanced and insightful. And just sticking to the theme of introspection, is there anything to be said about the nature of introspection or the nature of note-keeping? Was it a certain pattern or discipline or a certain heads under which he would capture his thoughts? Or was it free-flowing?
I'm just inducting based on what archives I saw. But he kept diaries better when he was out of power. Once you're in power, you're just much busier, right? Mm. But there were frequent periods in the Congress party when he was out of power, when he was hanging around. So there the diaries are pretty strong. Now, this is bad for a biographer because you actually want to know a little more about what he's doing when he is in power, right? Yeah. So for that, I used the appointment diary, you know, because I knew who he was meeting for every 15 minutes. So I didn't know what they were talking about, but I had a sense of the world of people he was meeting with. But his own diaries are kind of less detailed and less gossipy, certainly, when he's in power.
In the coaching work I do, if there's one thing that I end up suggesting the most to my coachees, it's the habit of reflection and journaling. I see too many people just firefighting from day to day that they leave very little time for reflection. The other thing that's changed from the days of Narasimha Rao to now is that we have smartphone penetration and a tsunami of stimulus hitting us. A very common temptation might be to succumb to that and think of browsing on the net as relaxing and unwinding. But it doesn't give you time with yourself, which is such an important element of growth. If I were to take the point Vinay makes about Narasimha Rao's diaries being more detailed when he was not in power, I think there's an interesting piece to reflect here. When leaders are in transition and in between roles, that's when they need to be reflecting much more to get the direction right. What energizes you? What skills you've picked up? What's your distinctive competitive advantage? And what does the opportunity landscape look like, and so on. Even if it's 5 minutes a day, it's fascinating what reflection, being with yourself and journaling can do in terms of developing a nuanced view of yourself and the world around you. Thank you for listening. If you're new to the podcast and want to get a sense of the nature of the content that's covered, you might want to go to YouTube and type Play to Potential Highlights from 2017. There, I've tried to capture the key takeaways from my various conversations last year with leaders across disciplines. If you want to listen offline, say during a car ride home or during airplane travel, you could also access the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Savan, and several other podcast apps. In fact, Google has also recently launched an app for podcast listening on Android platforms. If you went to playtopotential.com, you could also have the opportunity to listen to multiple voices curated by topic. To give you a sense, one of the playlists is Navigational Principles. Leaders discuss their personal frameworks they used during some of the pivotal transitions they made. If you find the content purposeful, please go to iTunes, rate the show, and share a review. It will help others discover it. Thank you for listening.